The last case in our calendar is 04-1066, Toledo Bar Association versus Norman Abood. Mr. Caruso.
May it please the court, my name is Jim Caruso. I'm here today representing the respondent, Norman Abood. Each disciplinary case involves unique facts and circumstances. In striving for fair disciplinary standards, consideration will be given to specific professional misconduct and to the existence of aggravating or mitigating factors. This policy of the Board of Commissioners is contained in Section 10A of the rules and regulations governing the procedures on complaints and hearings before the Board, and this policy was adopted and approved by this Court in October of 1990. If that guideline for imposing sanctions on lawyers is to have any real meaning in this case, this Court must look closely at the misconduct found by the Board, that is DR1-102A6, engaging in conduct that adversely reflects upon a lawyer's fitness to practice law, and 9102A, commingling, and the fact that the Board found no aggravating factors while finding many mitigating factors. It just won't do to say that precedent requires a sanction greater than the public reprimand as recommended by the panel that heard this case, as Realtor argues in its brief. Even if precedent does apply, this case is not the same as those cited by Realtor in its brief. In those cases, the misconduct was failure to file tax returns. And that's different from this case, whereas in the failure to file the tax returns, there's an element of fraud and deceit, whereas in this case, it's a failure to pay, failure to timely pay taxes. The panel expressly found in this case that there were no facts to support an allegation of dishonesty or fraud.
Well, the panel not concerned, I guess, with the fact he put money into his IOLTA account to try to hide it from those who were entitled to it?
The money was placed in the IOLTA account, and the IRS knew that that's where the money was because payments were made to the IRS out of that account. That was the one instance when the house was sold, and he placed his money in the IOLTA account because the IRS was consistently levying and foreclosing on all of his other assets, even despite his efforts to arrive at a payment plan with him. And in fact, had a payment plan at one point, and then they took it back while he was out of town, and that's when the house went up for sale. So it's not an excuse, but the reason he did it was because he was afraid that that money was going to be seized, and so he placed it in the IOLTA account. That's the only instance. And the money was used then, 4 months later, to pay the taxes that were due at that time to the Internal Revenue Service. No one lost any money on that proposition.
Usually the discipline is based on a lawyer's failure to put money in an IOLTA account. Here it's the reverse of that.
In fact, one of the panel members said that he'd never heard of a lawyer being accused of discipline for putting money in, but rather taking it out. And furthermore, this case is factually different from the cases cited in Realtor's brief. As noted by the panel, throughout this unfortunate episode, Mr. Abood was in constant contact with the Internal Revenue Service. He was continually asking for a payment plan. He was continually making payments to the Internal Revenue Service even up through the time of his conviction. And despite this, he served 16 months of a federal sentence in a federal penitentiary, whereas in all the other cases cited in Realtor's brief, every one of those respondents received a probated sentence by the federal court. Only one person, I think, in Mittendorf, that gentleman received a one-year probated sentence but served 10 days in jail. All the cases, no one served any prison time. Mr. Abood has served 16 months in a federal prison, 14 months actually in the prison, plus halfway house time, and now he's on probation.
To what do you attribute the severity of the IRS and the with regards to your client? By reading the case, I get the impression that his position is that the IRS was unreasonable, never gave him an opportunity to remedy it in a meaningful way. Attempts were made. They were rejected. He was a victim. What's this all about?
He got behind. Clients didn't pay him. He got behind.
I understand the rationale I understand the sequence, but there seems to be more than that, that he just became the poster child for the IRS to go after and prove a point?
I can only speculate, Your Honor, and my speculation is that he's an attorney and that they took a hard attitude on this. This was before the kinder, gentler Internal Revenue Service programs that came about later on. And I assume it has more to do with his profession than anything else. But that's speculation. I have no other idea. I don't know. And it certainly was the reason why Judge Carr sentenced him as severely as he did, and he was very clear in his sentencing and why he was doing it. He wanted to make an example that lawyers, like everybody else, have to obey the laws of the Internal Revenue Service. So he gave him the 16 months in prison. Each case involves unique facts and circumstances, and in this case, the unique facts and circumstances found by the board are that Mr. Abboud had no prior disciplinary record. He fully cooperated with the Internal Revenue Service at all stages of all the proceedings. He fully cooperated with the Toledo Bar Association in its investigation, and that's even emphasized by the fact that he self-reported this conduct even before the allegations were filed against him with the federal court. There were numerous character letters from judges, lawyers, and former clients, all attesting to Mr. Abboud's legal abilities, his integrity and his honesty, his work ethic. He has no problems with clients, lawyers, or judges. He has accepted complete responsibility for his actions. And in fact, the panel was very taken by his demonstrated remorse for the fact that he had embarrassed his family and his profession as well as himself by his conduct. He has been severely punished, which is another factor that the court should take into consideration in mitigation. He's been punished by the federal court by his prison time, which, again, nobody else has had to serve in any of these other cases. Despite all those mitigating factors, the board recommends that the court impose a one-year suspension with 6 months stayed for the purpose, for the sole reason, of his ongoing difficulties with the Internal Revenue Service.
Why doesn't the fact that he served time argue against a lighter sanction from us? I mean, if the federal court decided, whatever reasons the sentencing judge had, here's somebody who needs to serve time in federal prison, as you say, some of the others haven't had to do that, but why doesn't that argue in favor of a stricter sanction?
I think it argues in favor of a reduced sanction here because it's one of the mitigating factors under Rule 10. That's one of the mitigating factors that the court should look at, is whether or not there are other penalties involved and what those were. And so our argument is he's been penalized, and certainly this court has jurisdiction to penalize him at the same time, but I'm just saying you need to take that into consideration. He has been punished very severely by what's happened here. The continuing difficulties that Mr. Abboud has had with the Internal Revenue Service consist of outstanding taxes, predominantly interest and penalties, assessed for the years 1997, and an alternative minimum tax liability for the year 1999, for which he was paying $500 a month, and the balance due for 2002, which at the time of the hearing was approximately $9,000. Mr. Abboud has continued to make payments to the Internal Revenue Service and, in fact, has made larger payments than those called for as described in the hearing. And despite Mr. Abboud's limited earning capabilities, the 1997 and 1999 taxes have been fully paid, and significant reductions have been made in the balance for 2002. It should not be the amount that is owed to the Internal Revenue Service that would be persuasive in deciding what penalty to impose here, but rather it should be the fact that Mr. Abboud continues and has always maintained payments to the Internal Revenue Service. It would be wrong to further punish him because he does not have the economic ability to fully and completely satisfy his obligations to the Internal Revenue Service right now. The approach advocated by the relator seeks to impose a presumptive penalty devoid of consideration of the unique facts and circumstances of the individual. The court's precedent and the disciplinary rules require a more detailed examination and evaluation. They allow for the exercise of judicial judgment and discretion. Upon examination of the unique facts and circumstances of Mr. Abboud's case, we'd ask this court to impose the appropriate sanction of a public reprimand as recommended by the panel that heard the evidence and issues in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caruso. Mr. Cherry.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The only issue before this court in this case is the appropriate sanction for the admitted misconduct of Mr. Abboud. He admitted and stipulated the violation of two disciplinary rules, 9102A, by placing and keeping his own money in his IOLTA account to avoid seizure by the Internal Revenue Service, and 1102A6 for criminally failing to pay income taxes. Mr. Abood is a criminal with a law license. He admitted this. He served 14 months in federal custody. They were misdemeanor convictions, and therefore there was no interim suspension of his license. We suggest that a serious sanction, as recommended by the board, is appropriate in this circumstance. The respondent, on the other hand, seeks a public reprimand. If all he had done was conceal his own assets in his IOLTA account, that might be appropriate. That would ignore the criminal convictions and the criminal sentence that the federal court imposed. The public reprimand is the lowest level of sanction and ought to be reserved for the least serious violations. It is, by definition, a holding up of the respondent as having done something wrong. In this case, that would be no sanction at all. He has already been held up as having done something wrong, at least locally, and he's noted as being a convicted criminal. The respondent has implied that he didn't pay the taxes because he couldn't. We would dispute that. He owed the Internal Revenue Service because he had substantial income in the years in question, not because he didn't have income. He owed a lot of money because he made a lot more money. He simply chose to pay other expenses rather than his tax liability. He fell behind in his taxes in the late 1980s. The Internal Revenue Service instituted collection procedures against him in 1993. His house was seized. One would think that they would have his attention at that point. He subsequently sold the house in 1994, and at that point put the proceeds of the sale in his IOLTA account. He continued to ignore the tax liabilities. He did not pay the tax for 1994, the year after they seized his house, and he didn't pay the tax for 1995. And those were the results, or those were the acts that resulted in the criminal sanctions against him. He ignored them until 1998, at which point a criminal investigation was begun against him, and the IRS essentially threatened to put him in jail. He then mortgaged his new house, which was purchased with the proceeds from the old, for $285,000 and paid a portion of that to the Internal Revenue Service. To the best of our knowledge, he still owes substantial interest and penalties for several years in the early and mid-90s. But he continued not paying taxes until they finally put him in jail in 2002. With a couple exceptions, Mr. Abood consistently failed to pay taxes for a period of about 15 years, from 1987 to 2002. That's why he went to jail, and that's why his license should be suspended. We would submit, in keeping with the statement or the question of the Chief Justice, that the severity of the criminal sanction imposed on Mr. Abood argues in favor of a more serious sanction imposed by this court against his license rather than against it. We argued in our brief that for many years this court's position was that failure to file tax returns and a criminal conviction for failure to file tax returns resulted in a one-year actual suspension. Now, admittedly, Mr. Abood did not fail to file, or he wasn't convicted of failing to file returns, though he didn't file some of them until much later. And But we would submit that that course of cases ought to be considered strongly by this court in determining the appropriate level of sanction to be imposed on Mr. Abood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cherry. Mr. Caruso, you've saved almost 6 minutes of your time.
I won't keep you that long. Just 2 points. Number one, the inference or the implication by Mr. Cherry that Mr. Abood continued not to pay taxes over this course of years is just not true. At all times, he was making payments on his tax obligations. He could not become current. That is true. He couldn't do it because he didn't have the money to do it. That was proven at the hearing before the panel. He never ignored his tax liabilities. The evidence presented to the panel was that he wanted a payment plan. He got a payment plan. The IRS revoked the payment plan without notice to him. He nonetheless has continued to make payments all the time. Any money he received went to pay those taxes, and to say that he should be punished now because of those efforts is not right. The unique facts and circumstances in this case, again, require this court to look at this very carefully. And believe me, a public reprimand is not something minor in this case. He needs to continue his profession. He has huge tax obligations that he's trying to meet. And to do anything else is basically to go back to debtor's prison. If we're going to say, because you can't bring all this current, we're going to suspend your license to practice law, then we might as well go back to a debtor's prison concept and put him in jail. Thank you. And
thank
Justice
you,
Sweeney, may I just say as a personal note, on behalf of the bar, thank you for your years of service and dedication.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please, here in court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.
Thank you.